medical ethics, and I want to bring things more or less up to date. All right, so the material here is material I just got. It's from the April 1998 issue of the of a medical journal, so it's pretty up to date. Cardiology Journal, American Conference of Cardiologists, College of Cardiology, and it poses a whole lot of novel problems, and what I would like to do is respond to some of them, to see how the halacha did respond to some of them, and to see how we can develop response to some of these problems, because some of them are so new and so drastically different than anything that we had to deal with before, that just simply going back and citing the sources is not going to be of much help there. So, the first issue, well, there are three basic issues here. One is the role of the patient in medical decision-making, what they call now autonomy in the medical ethics circles. The second issue is, since the HMOs are out to make a profit and the patient is out to survive and the doctor is caught in the middle, we have a basic problem of in general, how to deal with limited resources, which is a problem that cuts across all schemes, whether it's socialized medicine, whether it's fee-for-service medicine, or whether it's managed care.
Hey,
not for me, though. article, of which constitutes the first piece of my handout here, the study of what's actually happened in Holland as a result of physician-assisted suicide confirms the worst fears of the slippery slope people. I mean, one finds, for example, that 59%, according to a survey by the New England Journal of Medicine, 59% of Dutch physicians do not report their cases of assisted suicide. 50%, more than 50%, feel free to suggest euthanasia to their patients. In other words, that's possible treatment, why don't we just kill you? And then the what's almost most troubling is that about a quarter admit to ending their patients' lives without their consent. So that the doctor has taken over the decision-making process. So it's not the patient who's deciding that it's about time to die, but the doctor who decides that he's not fit to live.
What were the statistics before? In other words, the doctor's always fit.
No.
Family conferences?
Yeah, conferences, and you know, there was indirect and things of this nature, but I don't believe that the figures are anything remotely like this. All right, so now let's take up each of these three issues in turn from the point of view of what we have in various halachic sources. Some people try to bring an issue of the fact that a patient can be compelled to undergo treatment against his will, from the fact that the Tosefta in Shkalim equates the collection of the Machzit HaShekel, the collection of taxes, to the fact that a patient sometimes has to undergo an amputation against, you hold down the patient against his will and tie him down. Mishi Yashvu B'Mikdash Shechilu L'Mashkein Mishkin Rabbi Lieberman in his Tosefta Kupshuta tries to use this as a source to indicate that sometimes you can force a patient to undergo treatment against his will, but I don't think that this is a very good example. Obviously, a patient who needs to have his foot amputated because it has some gangrene or something like that probably is willing to have his foot amputated, but in the course of doing it, since you don't have any anesthetics, you have to hold him down and keep him from moving. At the time that the amputation is performed. So that particular source is not very clear. On the other hand, we do find some indications of that on the issue of what, when you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat and when you're not allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat for a sick patient. When you have a competent doctor saying that there is a pikuach nefesh here, then you follow the doctor, even if the patient indicates that he doesn't feel that he wants to be Mechalel Shabbat. And there, the Magen Avraham writes, this is in Shulchan Aruch Sim Shin Chav Ches, Sifal, and also Sif Katanvav, Rofei Omer, Echad Omer Tzavich, Im Lo Ratza HaCholel LaKabel HaTrufa, Kofin Oto. If the patient refuses to take the medication, either because he feels that he doesn't want to be Mechalel Shabbat, or maybe because he just doesn't want to take the medication altogether, he can be forced to. Chole omer tzarich ani l'trufa plonit. The rofei omer ein tzarich shamin l'chole. Ve'im harofei omer she'oto trufei yazikenu shamin l'rofei. And that is the Radvaz, chelek aleph siman vav, actually chelek aleph whatever it is, but it's not, he has the wrong reference here, I have the right reference. But the Radvaz only refers to the second half of this, namely that if a patient says that he wants this particular medication and the doctor says he doesn't need it, then you listen to the patient unless the doctor says that it's dangerous. On this particular Magen Avraham, if the Rav Yaakov Emden in Mor Uktzia writes, Magen Avraham b'shem haradvaz, she'im rofei omer tzarich, im lo ratza hachole lekabel atrufa, kalfein otav. That's not correct. I mean, technically, the Magen Avraham was not quoting the Radvaz. When he made that statement, you don't find that in the Radvaz, but that is Magen Avraham's statement. Nearly, dafka kisherotzel limnoa mehishtamesh berufua havada'it. That's only if the patient refuses to accept definite, clear-cut medical treatment that's definitely known to work. In machichmir al atzmo michshash yisur shabbat, aval imnimna mpnei she'eino machzika l'rufuah beduka, if a patient refuses to take the medication because he doesn't trust the doctor, he doesn't think that this is a sufficiently verified treatment, afilu midat atzmo bovad, he certainly can reject treatment kol shekein im esayehu rofei acher. So that we only force a patient to undergo treatment if it's universal consent, even on the part of a patient, that this treatment would in fact be beneficial, but the patient is refusing to take it because it's Shabbat. So when the patient tries to be his own posek, we overrule him. When he tries to be his own doctor, on the other hand, we listen to him.
What's the answer to Shabbat taking before?
Either taking refuah if it's a chol she'ein bo sakana, or a procedure itself may involve chilul Shabbos.
Generally, but medicine, you don't take on Shabbos.
Right, there are various exceptions to that rule, but if it's a situation where there's a pikuach nefesh, you're supposed to be mechalel Shabbat to save the patient. Here, so this doesn't necessarily mean taking a pill, it means undergoing some kind of a treatment, and the treatment itself may involve chilul Shabbat. What difference does it make? It doesn't make any difference.
If you have to boil the water.
If you have to boil the water, if you have to cauterize, you have to have a fire to cauterize the thing, if you have to slaughter an animal, if you have to, whatever. There may be all types of procedures which involve chilul Shabbat, but we, Shabbat is tekuya, it's a,
generally, you take an aspirin or some for headache.
That's a separate prohibition. That refers to a case of cholesha engo sakanas, and that then depends on the degree of discomfort. If you are really seriously discomforted, if nafala mishkav, for example, then we would allow the taking of an aspirin or something like that. But for a mild headache, we wouldn't. But we're talking here about actual chilul Shabbat. The point where the Rav Yaakov Emden disagrees with the Magen Avraham is that Rav Yaakov Emden limits the Magen Avraham's decision that we can force a patient to undergo treatment to a halachic decision. In other words, if everyone agrees, the patient, the doctor, and all that the treatment is effective, but he doesn't want to do it because it's Shabbat, then we force the patient to be Mechalel Shabbat, because we know better than the patient what the laws are. But if the issue is one of whether the treatment as a treatment is beneficial to the patient disagrees with the doctor because he just feels that this particular treatment is not good for him, then here we have a case, says the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, of autonomy, namely that on medical issues, the patient's judgment can override the doctor's, especially if he has some supporting doctor who agrees that with his point of view.
This is also on Yom Kippur.
Whatever, Yom Kippur or Shabbat. But, for example, eating on Yom Kippur is a more common case, as you point out. But what Rabbi Yaakov Emden is enunciating here is the principle that even that a patient has the right to decide against medical advice that he doesn't believe what the doctor is telling him, and therefore prefers to go that way. Several years ago we discussed, and we'll come back to this later, with Moshe Feinstein's series of tshuvot on the issue of what to do when the patient or someone in the patient's general situation, in an end-of-life case, whether the patient should be obligated to take medication which prolongs his life but prolongs his agony. So let me just remind you of this. This was near the end in the collection of we learned these about just a couple of years ago, right? Yeah, so I'll just
read number of pages.
Well, it's in the Shuvot of Rav Moshe Feinstein, so if you start from the end and work your way back, it will be Igros Moshe, but work your way backwards. So it's the one from Eben HaEzer Dalet Simonayim Gimel. So from the end, from the back, working your way backwards is one. Two, three, four, five, six. I have 7 pages from the back.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Im yesh cholim she'ein liten lahem trufot laharachat chayehem. Are there a class of patients who should not be given medication to prolong your lives? Hinei bedavar im yesh anashim cholim ka'elu she'ein liten lahem eize minei trufot laharachat chayehem tzat yoter. Are there such patients for which it's preferable not to prolong their life by the administration of medication? Mufurash b'ktuvot resh kofdal v'uvda d'ptiratel shel Rebbe, d'boi rabbanon rachami v'ho'ilat bilatam shelo yamut avolo shelo yitvape. V'kishera'ata amtei d'Rebbe shemitkatzer kishemitzta'er tuva, אמרה יהי רצון שיחופו עליונים את התחתונים ולא הבישתי ולא הבישתי רבנן מבואי לרחמי. When the rabbis were still praying for his survival and she requested, שקלה כוזה שדיה מיגל הערה אישתיק, she threw something down from the top and they shut up, אישתיק מרחמים אנחנו נפשי דרבי. I guess this is not a good Xerox. ונקת זה הגמרה לה שמעינן שאיקה לפעמים שצריך להתפלל על אדם כשמצטער ואין מועילים לו עיני תרופות רפאותו והתפילות שיתרפא לו מתקבלו שצריך להתפלל עליו שימות. כי עמתי דרבי הייתה חכמה בדיני תורה והיו למדים ממנו רבנון לפעמים בעין ברן נדר ומרשת אפמם על הוד המפורש וגמר הוד הרבדימי דהבו אמר כל שאינו מבקר חולה אין מבקש עליו רחמים לא שיחיה ולא שאמרית. כתב דהבי כמה פעמים שצריך לבקש רחמים על החולה שימות. There are times when one should pray for the death of a patient, כגון שמצטער החולה בכל יום הרב, ואי אפשר לו שיחיה. כדימינו מפרק הנושא, כיוון דפזי אמתי דרבי דת המצטער, אמי יהיה רצון שיחופו את העליונים את התחתונים, כלומר דלימות רבי. ומשום הכי כעמד, המבקר את החולה גרום לשיחיה, היינו שמועיל בתפילתו אפילו לחיות שזוהו ברוב החולים, וזו שצריך מבקר לטייל ברוב הדרוב הפעמים, ומי שאינו מבקר אין צורך למה שאין מועיל לחיות, אלא אפילו היכה דעיקלי הנאה במיטה, even if the patient would be better off dying, אפילו אותו טובה זוטרותה אינו מהן. Even that little prayer that he should perish, אבל הרי דהרן מביא לדינה הודה התפללה עמתי דרבי, לבסוף כשראתה צערי דרבי טובה, ותפילות דרבנן לא מתקבלות בחרחותו לגמרי, ואף לא להקל ייסורו, אלא שיחיה כמו שהוא בייסורו. מפרש גם בדרבי דיני שלפנים צריך המבקר לתלל שימות, שכשרואים שאי אפשר להחולה שיחיה ויש לו, יתרפא, I guess we should say, שיש לו ייסורים. ובאין שכהי גפנו, in those types of patients, כשהרופאים מכירים שאי אפשר לו לתרעוב לחיות, ואף לא שיחיה כמו שהיה, אלא חולה ולא ייסורים. אבל אפשר ליתן לו סמי רפואה להאריך ימות כמו שהוא נמצא עתה בייסורים, אין ליתן לו מיני רפואות, אלא שיניחום כמי שהם. כי ליתן להם סמי רפואה שימות על ידי זה, ובכן לעשות איזו פעולה שיגרום לקצר אפילו רגע אחת, הוא בחשיבות שופך דמים. You can't speed up the death by any active intervention. אלא שיהיו בשבע אל תעשה. One should simply do nothing, אבל אם אין אלו סמים מרפא שיקילו הייסורים ולא יקצרו אף רגע מחייו, צריך לעשות כשעדיין אינו בוסף. On the other hand, he says, all of this is for the giving of medication, which will simply be like radiation treatment or other types of activities, which will simply prolong the patient's life in great discomfort for a small amount of time, but will not relieve his pain in any way.
Can't pull the plug. This way of life.
I didn't say that you can't pull the plug. We'll come to the issue of pulling the plug later. All I'm saying is that there are situations where a patient can decide, or the doctors can decide, should decide not to give additional medication. וחולה מסוכן שאינו יכול לנשום, on the other hand, if it's an issue of breathing, צריך ליתן לו חמצן, אף שהוא באופן שישר לרבותו, שהרי הוא להקל מיוסורה. In the case where a patient is conscious and has a choking sensation of not being able to breathe, there the function of the oxygenation or the intubation on occasion is not just simply to prolong his life, but to relieve his discomfort. And under those circumstances, that should be done. Okay. All right. Now let's turn to the second topic, which is the issue of limited resources.
So we're not going to extrapolate anything from this?
We will go into in more detail on end-of-life decisions. I just want to point out that the issue of autonomy we don't find many sources for. We find that Magen Avraham says that you can force a patient to take medication against his will, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden limits that to a halachic decision rather than to a medical decision, and that ultimately the patient, if he's competent, can decide what is the best medical treatment. Now let's move on to the second of our
five topics here.
Okay, on the page after the Tosefta in Shkalim, so we're back towards the beginning, right? The page right after the article from the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, we have a right there. I have it marked as 3-1 on the bottom, right? Mishnah and Gittin. Ein podin et ha-shvuyin yeter al kedei de-nachmeihem. One is not allowed to redeem captives for more than their worth. Mepnei tikkun ha-olam. Gemara says, Yibai Elohu. Hai mepnei tikkun ha-olam. What does this mean, maybe, from all of us? Mishum duchka b'zikura, o dilma mishum d'lulgalvi v'laytu tveh. In other words, is this law that says that you are not supposed to redeem shvuyim for more than what they are worth, is this a issue of politics, a political decision, namely that if you start to redeem captives for an exorbitant fee, then this will only lead to more and more blackmail. So therefore, in the long term, redeeming this particular person will cause all captives in the future to go for be held for higher ransom, and therefore the prohibition here is one of giving in to unreasonable blackmail. Or is the reason economic? Because this is an economic decision. Namely, that there is a mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim, the community is obligated to redeem its captives, but on the other hand, it's not obligated to use up all of its resources for this purpose. So is the reason mishum duchka d'zikura, which is an economic reason, or is the reason one of strategy, political strategy, to avoid blackmail in the future? The difference would be, for example, if an individual personally redeems one of his relatives out of his own funds. A man is allowed to do what he wants with his own money, presumably. So if a person is, if someone is willing to pay an exorbitant blackmail fee, if the second reason is not the correct reason, in other words, if the reason is purely one of economic equity, that you don't use up all the public resources for Pidyon Shvuyim as opposed to other mitzvot, then an individual can do what he wants with his own money. But if the reason is because we don't encourage more kidnapping, then of course an individual is not allowed to do it next.
Not enough community if somebody's really not worth money. So, paying twice what he's worth is not doing it but it would encourage people to kidnap someone.
So how do you evaluate people? That's one problem. Secondly, in other words, what does it mean? What does it mean, yeter al kedei d'mehem? How do you decide what kedei d'mehem is to avoid paying more than what you're supposed to?
What is the literal meaning of the long day travel?
Not to incite them. Okay, let's take a look at the next page.
What's the decision of that?
The Gemara sort of leaves it open. The Kashma, the Levi, Badaga, Palka, Levate, the place of Alpha, Dinah, Zahar, Amar Abai, Unan Lema, the Bratsam Chachamim Abba. They had a case where somebody did redeem his daughter at an exorbitant price, but the Gemara says, Dilma shelob ratzon chachamim abad. So citing the actions of an individual don't necessarily mean that it has the approval of the chacham. So that, let's take a look first at the Radvaz, and then we'll take a look at the Yam Shel Shlomo. The Yam Shel Shlomo, of course, is very famous on this passage. That's why I didn't reproduce it. שאלת ממני עוד ביחד דעתי על הוד עצנן אין הודין את השבויים יתה על כדי דמיהן. אי הבי דמיהן כעבר הנמכר בשוק, או הבי דמיהן כמו שנמכרים השבויים עד. How do you fix what dmehem means? Does it mean their value as slaves, assuming that there's a slave market, how much would this particular individual drink on the slave market? Or does it mean the standard going rate for captives? In other words, if there's a general piracy and kidnapping and blackmailing going on in general, and they capture Jews as well as non-Jews, this sort of a universal going rate for the redeeming of captives, and therefore the Jews shouldn't pay more for their captives than for other captives. That's the Marshal discussion. You're remembering the Marshal of the Amshal Shlomo Netflix. Tshuva. Kvar nahagu kol Yisrael lefdot et ha-shvuyim yoter mekdei dmeihem ha-nimkarim b'shok. The general practice is not to limit the payment of ransom to their values as actually slaves. Sharei zakein or katan ein shaveh b'shok yoter mi'asara dinarim. An old man or a young boy is not worth very much in the market. And they're actually redeemed for maybe as much as 10 times their value as slaves. The time of the minhag, the kaimlem, the ta'am of Dilma Liglu Relaytu, the Yinsu Atzman Lishkot Behem. We accept the second view of the Gemara, that the reason why we don't pay more than their worth because we don't want to incite the people to further blackmail. V'harei anu ro'im b'zman hazeh sh'ashaba'im ein yotzim l'chadchila b'shvil Yisrael. The pirates who go out and capture people and hold them for ransom, the kidnappers, which apparently was a pretty big profession in those days, don't go and capture Jews particularly. Ela l'kol mishiyim tzu'u. They are willing to capture anybody. Hilkach afilu shepodim oto yoter mima sheshadei v'shuk, kevan she'en podim oto yoter mima shenibdan sha'ar akum, mutar. Since we pay the going rate for captives, and not something special because they're Jewish, that is permissible. V'hanach lam Yisrael shehem gomlei chesed v'hem gomlei b'nei 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 chesed v'hochi yitel l'meidak l'matnitin v'lo k'tani ein podin et ha-shvuyim yoter m'kdei shovyehen. It doesn't say that you don't redeem the captives more than their worth, elo yoter m'kdei b'meihem, but rather more than their money, than what they cost. He's trying to distinguish between their value as slaves and the going market rate as for paying blackmailers. Mashma d'mehen shal shvuyim ha-ragil b'chal ha-shvuyim. In other words, the standard going rate that you pay to pirates. Aval lefdok otam yoter mekdei sh'ar ha-shvuyim shal sh'ar ha-shonot akom ein ra'oy. But to pay more for Jews than for non-Jews, that's not good. Da'ik alamecha shdilma kevan shepodin otam yoter mish'ar ha-shvuyim yitzu l'chadchila l'vakesh yehudim yimsu atzman aleihem. Because then they will make a special point of capturing Jews. The economic duchka of tzibura, v'kol sheken shekvan et pasen sh'Yisrael podim et ha-shvuyim apal pi she'en lahem mishalahem klum shevaday ya'alu harbei b'mechirata. As it is known that Jews redeem captives and even go into debt for this purpose, if the price is not fixed at the standard going rate for the redemption of captives, then they will raise the price of Jews because then they know that the Jews will go into debt to do it. So the fact that they don't have the money is no disincentive. But we see that even this particular rule is in fact violated, that we do indeed sometimes redeem Jews at higher than the going rate. V'yesh lomar v'samkulahem el echad mishlosha o avarat amin chada sheyesh akun shavoy shepodin ato be'eret zeh she'anu podin ha-Yisrael. There, we don't pay more than the highest going rate. So even though the highest going rate is normally paid by the individual's family, and here it's a burden on the community rather than on the family, לא יהיה מגמתו של השבועי שבעי לבקש ישראל אלא לבקש בעלי פדיון גדול. So it doesn't really contradict this principle, he's saying. Since the Jews are not, even though they're being redeemed for more than what the going rate of those types of individuals are, they're not being redeemed for the high, more than the highest price. Inami sheish יש בתוכם חכם שבודים אותו בכל מקום, או אפילו שאין אתה תלמיד החכם, יש בהם מישהו מוכן לזה, בודים אותו בכל מקום, או שמה יש בהם קטנים, יביאו מה הדת, ונמצא שאין הם לומדים אלא הדת, ובדרך כלל קולטים אותו לחלל שבת ומועדות, וישים אותם, יישרים את השנים האחרים. These last three, of course, don't answer to this fundamental objection. ואף על פי שיש לבדים לומר על כל התנאים הללו, אומר התנא, אין פודין את השבויים יותר מתקניהם. After all, the Mishnah explicitly says not to do this. מכל מקום יש לדחות דילמה לב עיר התנא בשבויים דאיכו כלחני דאחמא. אמן, וכיוון שהדבר הספק, הנח להם לישראל ויחזיקו במידה, כיוון שהם שמחים וססים בה, יש להם בדסקה גדול. בטוב שאין אנו קופים אותם, אלא שהם בעצמם מתנדים, אין כאן די מיקוש ובצבר רבה איקה, ויפה נהגו להחזיק במידת אברהם, אבינו עליו השלום מתקרב מגילי העניין. Okay. So, basically he's opposed to paying more than the highest rate, the highest non-Jewish rate, but he can't do anything about it, so he tries to find some mollifying excuses.
Every
time
he's
more enthusiastic,
that he really back doesn't prove
this. I don't think so. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the more famous Marshal, which I don't have on the computer, and therefore I will just simply read. Matanit. I didn't reproduce it.
No.
It's in Gittin. Gittin Perkdalit, Simon Sadakar. On the Mishnah of Ein Podin et HaShvuyim. Matnitim. Ein Podin et HaShvuyim yeter al kedei mehem shiroim l'mkol l'shuk. The Torah avdut m'pnei tikkun ha'olam. So he takes for granted that it's their value as slaves. Ve'ein mevi'im et HaShvuyim m'pnei tikkun ha'olam. Dei mavrikim et HaShvuyim l'ikonem avgim l'amen m'pnei takan HaShvuyim. Naskin v'sugi yivaylu m'pnei tikkun ha'olam mishum dukka d'tzibura mishum d'lo leita v'lishvuhu. Tashma. The lady Badaka Palkala Garte the Fleta Alpe Dinwi and my body man lema long divot some chachamimabad golo ifshita. Vikshuha tosvot the halasha koyem, what gasin and viktivot pergnara, nishvit volume of a chimimino arasora with an impam mishana pode, mishum the ishto, hashiva kutuko, yotamimito, where yalatsmo lotukum rabanon shalom yitain kolash loba ad nasho. Then, as far as redeeming one's wife is concerned, it's considered. And therefore one can't tell a person what to do or what not to do with his own money when it comes to his own body. But can't come chacham shenish baba v'hem lo takan rabbanan kirei manu karek and he's like him. V'hada pode at atzmo v'chol mankam shalom haimu v'shut avu lo chovah in lo v'sakanat v'kashot. Okay, let me skip a little bit of this. Let's get to the more famous part. כל מה שכתב הרמנו לפי שיטתו לפסק אתם בעולם הזה רבישים עם דמיון, לכן לפי מה שכתב שם בעולם הקטן, כאן מכן יש את מיני לתמה משום דוקר לציבור הוא, ושאוי בוודאי לכתוב משלו מי שרוצה, מייחד הלכה דוקר לציבור עד כאן. זה יתאים לנו לדבר הטוב של תורש, ושאני אשתו שיגדו פרופו, ויהיה עצמו לתיקן, ואידנה, אנשי גומלי חסדים בארץ תוג במה. So Turkish, Milat Chassadim Society, the Marshal was writing from Poland, But Mukim Lahem, Podim Hashvim, Yoter, Yoter, Mikdei, Mehem. So he is reporting the same sort of situation that the Radvaz is. Higam Shamati, Shaiti, Vedat, Toto, Hatzorel, Litos, Gam Harosh, Talmido, Venodalo, Ubaracho, Tolotilo, Venitsol, Rachamar, Bubor, Hasadat. That the Rush himself escaped from Germany and went to Spain to avoid being captured and being held captive. Behind it, the Vatrim of Hashem Yosef al Sharamu, Ulatam Rukhne, Hashem Tzofun. Vagambe wanted to remember him that Matri Yosef Bidola. He says another reason why the practice goes against the Mishnah is because the number of Jews has decreased. Does anyone have any figures as to what the population, Jewish, worldwide Jewish population was around the 16th century? I mean, I get different reports. Some was quite small, you know, total population of under 500,000. וגם לעת הזאת מחבדין על ישראל ניסויים ועינויים לכלפם כדי לעבור על הדף ולעשות מלאכה בשבת שלא לצורך. גם אם לא יפתו אותם דיקה למיכה שלו על ליבם שלא יארגו אותם ובסכנת מפרשות קודים יותר מכדי די מהם עין וכמה מצמאיהם. על כן, נדבק מבן בגופם ומונם לבדות השבועים וסייתם לשמיה עליהם. So he also approves of the common practice of paying more than the shuyim, the typical shavuy would be worth, even though it goes against the mission. Shamati, now this is what you were remembering. Shamati, and this is our sole source for this. Shamati al hamara mi Rutenberg zal, shayat tafus b'migdal Eigesheim, kama shanim. He was kept captured in the castle for many years. That's certainly true. Bahasal Tavan and Haki Lod Sach Gadol, and King Rudolf demanded a huge ransom. Bahakilot Ayurot Simlich Dodo, and the communities wanted to redeem him. Lohe Niach, Ki Amar, Ein Kodim Ashriyim Yotel Mikdei Mehem. And he, the Maharam of Wittenberg, did not allow the communities to redeem him because of this particular mission. ותמה אני מאחר שהיה תלמיד חכם מופלג והיה לא היה כמותו בדרו וקרוב לחסידות ושורי לפתעותו בכל ממון שעולה ומרוב הנבטו לא רוצה להחזיק עצמו כתלמיד חכם מופלג מכמה גם היה לו לחוש על ביטוי תורה כאשר כתב בעצמו שהוא היה יושב בחושך בצלמונת בלי קרה ואורה והיה מקונן שלא היו אצלו ספרי הפוסקים והתוספות איך לא היה חש לעבום ביטוי התורה מאחר שרבים צריכים לו ובדאי דעתו היה שאם יפדו אותם כן יש למיכו שלא יעשו כן כל הצרים לתלמידי חכמים לתלמיד חכם המופלג שבדור ורוב הממון עד שלא יספיק ממון הגדולה לתלדם ותפתקח התורה בישראל. So he was applying this, says the Marshal, that he was applying this principle that even though he would have been an exception to the general rule, to the Mishnah, nevertheless he didn't want to do this for the same reason. It's not clear that this is a completely true story. If you take a look in Agus' book on the Maharam Yotenberg, he goes into a long historical survey as to whether this story that is, which is a famous story.
Everybody knows it.
Hmm?
Everybody knows it. I mean, technically, they have a different version.
I wasn't there, so I don't know what the facts are, according to Professor Agus.
Hmm? I mean, it's the type of thing you learn in third grade.
Right. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's correct. If you take a look in Agus' book, you'll see.
We learned Jakob Katz's book on Shvut on Going Shel Shabbos, that there was a they threw the people threw it above, or they asked somebody to throw a another log on the fire on Shabbos to keep it warm. That was a proof of something that was from Shabbos.
Yeah, there are problems with the Maharam in Wittenberg in general on the question of what you're allowed, whether you're allowed or not allowed to heat up, and you're saying that he may have had a slightly different opinion when he was in jail than what he had before. The fact that he was imprisoned is true.
Yeah.
The fact that he was redeemed, that his body was redeemed after his death for a large amount is also true. The fact that he wasn't redeemed while he was alive is also true. The question is why, and whether he issued an objection to that being so. This is a story that we have from the Marshal, but the evidence that Professor Agus brings in his long book on the Maamarim Rutenberg raises this story into question. Since this is peripheral to our topic of discussion, I don't want to go into that. Okay. But what I'm saying is that in general we have a history of resistance to undue expenditure on resources, and in particular also for medical resources. Now, let's...
I understand Rob Kamenetsky said the same thing when Rob Kamenetsky was taking the airplane hijack.
Okay, so what we see from here is that the in the 16th century, at least, the Jewish communities, especially the Sephardic Jewish communities, used to disobey the Mishnah's rule, that is, pay more than the going rate. But, and nevertheless, the Radvaz, although he may have been opposed to it, found redeeming features, and the Marshal, as well. So they couldn't really impose the Mishnah against the existing contracts. All right. The reason that I raise all of this is, of course, that the issue is, one, of course, is how much any society wants to expend on any particular resource, and there's no doubt that the rise of HMOs, at least in the United States, is the result of an extreme rise in the percentage of GNP that was spent on medical care. The figures rose from about 5% of GNP spent on medical care in 1960 to close to 14% in 1994. And society as a whole couldn't tolerate this and therefore imposed this entirely novel regulation of the entirely novel way of dealing with medical problems by managed care, HMOs, and so on. Yeah, it's different from the Kupas Tolim because the HMOs are out to make a profit. So therefore, it's in their interest. Well, you're not affiliated with any HMO, are you? Or? Only about 600 of them. So therefore, you're safe from the threats of any particular one. In other words, you don't have regulations that tell you that you can't offer a particular treatment or even describe a particular treatment to a patient.
I am, but the issue is I deal with that more than that they are likely to be trying to treat.
The problem of the current doctors, of course, is that they're caught in between because, on the one hand, originally their oath of all, you know, the Hippocratic oath and things of this nature were one of service to the patient. Now there's the issue of the profit motive. And the question is, it's not clear, at this particular stage in history, it's not clear how the situation is going to stabilize. For example, should the doctor be the patient's advocate? That is, the essential disbursement of fund is made by some officer in the HMO who doesn't know the patient, doesn't know any of really of the details of the case, but simply issues general rules based on what statistically he feels will increase the company's profit or decrease the company's profit. And therefore, one has some kind of an adversarial system, like the legal system, which has sort of reached the state of pretty much disaster.
That's a very cynical formulation.
What do you mean?
I mean, if the decision's profit is a motive, it's also a motive for the fee-for-service position to maximize the income. There's a range of options, and one can argue, often inconclusively, which one is superior. So saying that there's a motive for the HMO to increase their profits is true, but it's also true the other way around. Without an HMO, physicians can increase their profits by doing certain treatments. So it's a mixed
No doubt. Profit motive of the physicians from the 1960s to the 1990s that led to this current situation. No, I agree with you 100% that the physicians are in the main responsible for the events that actually have taken place. That is, that they were prescribing, perhaps over-prescribing, not so much treatment as tests, procedures, which led to the establishment of the managed care organizations. But the situation that we have now is unstable. I think you will agree to that. That whatever the situation is going to look like in 5 years, it's not going to look, we don't know, but it's not going to look like it is now. And one possible direction is that the patient, the doctor acts as the patient's, just broadly speaking, as the patient's advocate against the HMO, sort of like a lawyer against the prosecuting attorney, for example, in the legal system. Or another system would be where the doctor participates in the triage as a